Good morning. The question I start with this morning is the title to the message, and it is a little bit different. Prayed this morning that God would be able to use this and just bless it. The title for the message is this morning, "How big is your monster?" A little different. So on a scale, you know, of 1 to 10, I guess the question is, how big would you rate your monster? And well, of course, then we got to figure out, who is your monster? And so I've defined for us a few monsters this morning. So is your monster tomorrow? Do you worry about tomorrow? Do the thoughts of what might happen tomorrow have you scared? Does the monster of tomorrow keep you awake at night? Now, I do not intend to make light of this real feeling monster of anxiety. Is your monster sickness? Do you have a sickness that affects your daily life? Are you at a place beyond the doctor's ability? Are there health issues that loom monstrously over you? And I do not intend to make light of this real feeling monster of helplessness. Is your monster death? Has death come to a loved one too early? Is your everyday existence changed forever because of death? Do you feel like death has taken more from you than from others? I do not intend to make light of this real feeling monster of grief. Please remain from chuckling, but is your monster your spouse? Do you have a spouse that does not understand you? Do you have a spouse who thinks you were wrong? Do you have a spouse who distanced themselves from you? Do you have a spouse that is at times against you? I do not intend to make light this morning of this real feeling monster of a difficult marriage. Is your monster your friends? Do you have friends that lead you astray? Do you have friends that do not speak the truth? Do you have friends who try to persuade you over to their way of thinking and doing? Do you have friends that actually don't know you at all? And I do not intend to make light of the real feeling monster of peer pressure. Is your monster not understanding God's will and His plan? Is God doing some monstrosity in your life right now and you don't get it? Is your monster not understanding God's plan right now in light of wayward children, in light of losing your job, in light of wrecking your car, in light of fighting with your parents, in light of caring for your aging parents? Does God not make sense right now? I do not intend to make light of this real feeling monster of not understanding God's ways. So pick one and rate it 1 to 10. How big is your monster? The monster of anxiety, the monster of helplessness, the monster of grief, the monster of a difficult marriage, the monster of peer pressure, the monster of not understanding God's ways. So again, pick one, scale of 1 to 10, 1 being the least, 10 being the greatest. How big is your monster this morning? Anxiety, helplessness, grief, difficult marriage, peer pressure, not understanding God. Log your number, 1 to 10, in your brain somewhere. Are you finished, hopefully? Were you able to pick one? You don't have to raise your hand. There may be a few of you that actually picked two of those monsters. And perhaps a very few of you actually picked three out of that list. Well, I know for a fact that there was one fellow who had a confirmed five out of six of these monsters in his life. And not through his lifespan, but at one time, these monsters, he had five out of six. Anybody want to guess who that was? His name was Job. See, if you were in the men's class or in the youth Sunday school class, we were studying Job, and we got to the best part of Job, and it snowed for 2 weeks in a row. And I just couldn't let it go. And so you'll notice that I was preparing for the youth class and referencing the monsters, but hopefully you all enjoy it too. But again, Job and all his monsters, helplessness. His wealth was stolen by raiding armies and gone. Grief. His children were killed all at once in one windstorm. Roof came down and they were gone. A difficult marriage. Maybe you think I read into this too much. I understand. Job's wife would not touch him and left him alone and said for him to curse God. And in my mind, I think Job's wife would have been the one right there comforting him. And that isn't what happened to Job. Peer pressure. Job's friends asked him, what did he do to deserve all this? And Job said, I didn't do anything. And they said, no, really, Job, what did you do to deserve all this? And he said, no, I didn't do anything. And they were like, no, Job, you're not getting it. You don't even know what you did wrong, but Job, you did something wrong, so you can confess to us, what was it? And Job said, I didn't do anything. And his friend said, oh, you're so far gone, you didn't even know what you did wrong. Job, in peer pressure. And Job, facing the monster of not understanding God. And Job sat in dust, in ashes, in pain, taking broken pieces of pottery and scraping the boils from his skin, not understanding God at all. I would venture to say that Job and all the monstrosities that happened to him are not that much different than yours and mine today. Now, Job is an old book of the Bible. It's very old. It's so old, it's not dated. It's understood from tradition that this was passed down by oral tradition from family to family to family to family. And everyone knows Moses wrote the first five books of the Bible, and I've found a few people that say Moses wrote down Job as well. The time period of Job, history as best I can tell, is mid-Genesis. So this is old, very old. And even though Job is the oldest or one of the oldest books of the Bible, Job's trials are really not much different than yours and mine today. So let us learn from God as he teaches Job about monsters. That's right. You know, God actually answered Job in all of his questions and in his pain and in his strife. God comes down and speaks to Job out of a whirlwind. And in chapters 2 through 37, which is a lot of chapters, God is silent. God doesn't say anything. Chapters 2 to 37, God is quiet. And then in chapter 38, God speaks. God speaks to Job. So you can find Job chapter 38 this morning and follow along. Job chapter 38. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, "Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me, if you have understanding, who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band? When I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors? When I said, 'This far you may come, but no farther, and here your proud waves must stop'?" You see, God begins by putting Job in his place. And I think that's very key as we face our monsters. God began by adjusting Job's perspective. And God says to Job, "This is what I have done. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Or who shut the sea with the doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band? When I fixed my limit for it and set bars and doors? When I said, 'This far you may come, but no farther, and here your proud waves must stop'?" When God says, "This is what I have done," he is in essence saying to Job, "Job, what have you done? What did you do? This is what I have done." Verse 12, "Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? It takes on form like a clay under a seal and stands out like a garment. From the wicked their light is withheld and the upraised arm is broken. And I have not looked at dawn since studying this passage years ago." Dawn, beautiful sunrise, is not the same to me since studying this. It jumps off the page to me. And God again is asking Job, "Can you make the sun come up?" But as we look at the words that God used, "Can you cause the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth?" And if you've ever seen a sunrise in the morning, there's just a light that just kind of slowly glows. And as the light comes up, as it comes up, it spreads across the earth. And it looks like the light is taking hold of the ends of the earth. That's how it's described here. And it takes on a form like clay under a seal. And when the sun first comes up, it's kind of fuzzy and it's kind of mixed in the clouds. But as it comes up, it actually takes on into a, you can see it, the sun. And that's just what happens when you pour wet, hot wax into a seal. And it's kind of mushy and mulchy, and it doesn't really have a shape. And you put something in a seal, boom, it has a shape. It's vivid. And that's how God describes his own glorious sunrise. And it takes on form like clay under seal, and stands out like a garment. From the wicked, their light is withheld. And it says in the end of verse 13 that the wicked be shaken out of it. And I don't know if you know, but most bad things happen at night. I know my friend is a police officer in Florida, and he likes the night shift because he can actually catch bad guys, he says. During the day, it's fender benders and little things like that that happen. But at night is when the evil is. And it's known in police departments. I mean, it's a fact. And it says here, have you caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? And that still goes on today. And God says again to Job, can you even just make the sun come up? And skipping down to verse 22. God challenges Job with what he knows. Have you entered the treasury of snow? Or have you seen the treasury of hail, which I have reserved for the time of trouble, for the day of battle and war? By what way is light diffused, or the east wind scattered over the earth? God says to Job, what do you know? He continues on in verse 28. Has the rain a father? Or who has begotten the drops of dew? From whose womb comes the ice and the frost of heaven? Who gives it birth? The waters harden like stone and the surface of the deep is frozen. God is saying to Job, what do you know? Do you know? What do you know? Do you know anything about this? Do you know about what I have made? Verse 31. I was amazed when I found this in the Word several years ago. Again, Job is the oldest book right in there with Genesis. And here he talks about our stars. And he uses the same words as we do. And it's in the Bible. Can you bind the cluster of Pleiades or loosen the belt of Orion? Can you bring out Maseroth in its season? Can you guide the great bear with its cubs? Do you know the ordinances of heaven? Can you set their dominion over the earth? Can you lift up your voice to the clouds that an abundance of water may come over you? Can you send out lightnings that they may go and say to you, here we are? Wow. God challenges Job. God says to Job, you don't know much, and what you do know, you have no control over. God says, Job, you really don't know much, and what you see, you have no control over. Verse 39, can you hunt the prey for the lion or satisfy the appetite for the young lions when they crouch in their dens? Or lurk in their lairs to lie in wait? Who provides food for the raven when its young ones cry to God and wander about for lack of food? And again, God puts Job in perspective that Job sees creation, but Job does not know creation. And God continues on and ask Job questions on questions on questions. And in chapter 39, God continues to question Job. And I'm just going to pull out a few verses from chapter 39, verses that I connect with about the horse. And starting in verse 19 of chapter 39. Have you given the horse strength? Again, God speaking to Job. Have you clothed his neck with thunder? Can you frighten him like a locust? His majestic snorting strikes terror. He paws in the valley and rejoices in his strength. He gallops into the clash of arms. He mocks at fear and is not frightened, nor does he turn back from the sword. The quiver rattles against him, the glittering spear and javelin. He devours the distance with fierceness and rage. Nor does he come to a halt because the trumpet has sounded. At the blast of the trumpet, he says, aha! He smells battle from afar, the thunder of captains and shouting. Horses, a unique animal that God made. I got to spend a lot of time with horses in Colorado. I had 40 horses that I took care of for a winter. And they were in a dry lot, and I had to hay and feed them every day. There were certain horses in that group that were used for handicapped people. And they did handicap rides. And there was people that were paralyzed, and they would put on horses, and you would walk beside them and help them balance, and they would learn. And it was a nonprofit that they did, and about half of the horses were used for that. Some of those same horses that were used for handicap riding were used for halftime rodeo shows. I was not a part of this group, but they would strap on six guns and blanks and have this costume get up, and they would do halftime shows for rodeos out west. And these same horses that were used for trail rides, which just stood in line and went for hour rides, they also were used for handicapped people. And these same horses were also used for rodeo halftimes, ride them up, shoot them up, bang, and lasso and rope and all kinds of carry on. And these horses, they loved it. They loved every part of it. And these same horses would just plod along slowly. But if you walked out with spurs on and they heard that little jingle, whoop, their heads came up. They knew it was ready. It was time for a show. And they enjoyed that. And I just see a glimpse of how a horse would react to battle. They can be trained their nerve. And you see that every day with the buggy and the horse. That horse is on that road. Even if that semi is 3 feet from him, this is his space, he's going. A horse can be trained. And God made him that way. And we get to see it often, like I said, in a buggy. But the horse is an amazing creature. And God says to Job, this is what I have made. What have you done? This is what I have made. And so, in chapter 40, God does and says a tremendous thing. In chapter 40. It's right there in the second verse. Chapter 40, beginning there at verse 1. Moreover, the Lord answered Job and said, verse 2, shall the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? He who rebukes God, let him answer it. Wow. If I was to phrase that, allow me to humbly rephrase that. The one who argues and is angry and upset with God, is he the one that should correct God? Wow. The one who is arguing, who is angry and arguing and upset with God, is he the one who should correct God? Wow. Verse 2 there in chapter 40, highlight that one, save it for any time you're tempted to be upset with God. Wow. In verse 3, then Job answered the Lord. Behold, I am vile, Job said. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand over my mouth. Once I have spoken, but I will not answer. Yes, twice, but I will proceed no further. And Job is quiet. So my question to you now, how big again is your monster? The monster of helplessness, of grief, of difficult marriage, of peer pressure, of not understanding God's ways. 1 through 10, is it the same number? Let's keep going. Job and his fears were silenced by God. But God was in no means silenced by Job and his fears. And God was not done. And God continues on. Job said, I'm done. God said, I'm not done. I'm keeping going. Here it is in verse 6. And then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you and you shall answer me. Would you indeed annul my judgment? Would you condemn me that you may be justified? That's another one to highlight. Again, if I would say it, this is what I would say. Job, would you belittle God just to make your life make sense now? I hope we would never find our place there. But God is challenging Job. Would you indeed annul my judgment? Would you challenge me so that you make more sense, so that your life makes more sense right now? We would never want to lessen God just because we don't understand what he's doing. We would never want to lessen the greatness of God just because we don't understand what he's doing. Verse 9. Have you an arm like God? Or can you thunder with a voice like his? Then adorn yourself with majesty and splendor and array yourself with glory and beauty. And this is another, a great section of Scripture for everyone that's either confused or angry or upset with God. I love how God sets Job and us straight by just more knowledge of him. It's what it takes to put us in our place. And God is not finished. Verse 11, God continues on with Job, disperse the rage of your wrath. Look on everyone who is proud and humble him. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low. Tread down the wicked in their place. Hide them in the dust together. Bind their faces in hidden darkness. Then I will also confess to you that your own right hand can save you. God says to Job, if you think you know real justice, then what? Then go ahead and save yourself. Did you catch that? God said, you think you know justice, then go ahead and save yourself. Disperse the rage of your wrath. Look on everyone who is proud and humble him. Look on everyone who is proud and bring him low. Tread down the wicked in their place. Hide them in the dust together. Bind their faces in hidden darkness. Then I also will confess to you that your own right hand can save you. And this is it. And this is where we need to lay down our own idea of justice. If you can lay down this idea, it will help you tame many monsters. And here it comes. This is the idea. Get ready. God is not fair. God is not fair. In our minds, we think we know what is right and fair and just. And I'm sorry, but you don't. And I do not know true fairness at all either. See, we do know what is just and fair just from our own perspective. But in light of all the things that God knows and that God sees and that God puts into place, especially as we heard from God in these last few chapters in Job, we cannot nearly understand it all. And so we must also lay down our own feeble idea of justice. Let me say that again. In our own minds, we think we know what is right and fair and just. And I'm sorry, but you do not. I do not know what true fairness is at all. We do know what is fair and just from our own perspective. But in light of all the things God knows and sees and puts into place, especially as we heard from God in these last few chapters in Job, we cannot nearly understand all of it. And so we must lay down our own feeble ideas of justice. And so, the statement that God is not fair. God allowed these many trials to happen to Job, and I'm sorry, but in my mind, I have to say that's not fair. God gave Job two times what he had at the end than he had in the beginning, and in my mind, I have to say that's not fair. The thief on the cross was saved by grace. And in my mind, that's not fair. Jesus, the Son of God, died on a cruel Roman torturous cross. A perfect man who never sinned died for everyone else's problem. And that is not fair. And I, upon receiving the gift of life through believing in the saving blood of Jesus, I get to live in heaven forever instead of hell. And based on my life alone, that's not fair. And you know, I am thankful that God is not fair. And I have come to the place to be grateful that God is not fair. And when we lay aside our ideas of what is fair and just, a lot of our monsters go away. So how big is your monster now? 1 to 10. You know, Job thought he had big monstrous problems. And you know what God showed Job? Real monsters. I love these next few verses. Job thought he had problems. He thought he was kind of in a bind. And God wasn't done. He said, "Now, Job, you think you got big problems? Let me show you some of the big problems that I made." So we begin in 15. "Look at the behemoth which I made along with you. He eats grass like an ox. See now, his strength is in his hips, and his power is in his stomach muscles. He moves his tail like a cedar. The sinews of his hips are tightly knit. His bones are like beams of bronze. His ribs are bars of iron. He is the first of the ways of God. Only he who made him can bring near his sword." You see that his sword is capitalized H. Only God's sword is big enough to conquer this dinosaur, for lack of a better word. "Behemoth. Surely the mountains yield food for him, and all the beasts of the field play there. He lies under the lotus trees, in a covert of reeds and marshes. The lotus trees cover him with their shade. The willows by the brook surround him. Indeed, the river may rage, yet he is not disturbed. He is confident, though what? Three things. Though the Jordan gushes in his mouth, though he takes in an eye, or one pierces his nose with his snare, he's still confident, doesn't even bother him. That's how big this critter is. God says, "Job, you got big problems? Let me show you a big problem that I made and that nobody can touch him but me." I had one speaker describe the lotus trees as the very tallest of the tall trees that have that little bit of shade at the top. And he gets his shade and he lies under the lotus trees. He's up there at the very, very top, at the tallest. One big behemoth. And God's still not finished. And God keeps going. And God, again, in essence, tells Job, "You think you have monsters? Check out these real monsters." In verse 41, the Leviathan. This is a strange creature. "Can you draw out a Leviathan with a hook, or snare his tongue with a line which you lower? Can you put a reed through his nose, or pierce his jaw with a hook? Will he make supplications for you? Will he speak softly to you? Will he make a covenant with you? Will you take him as a servant forever? Or will you play with him as with a bird? Or will you leash him for your maidens? Or will your companions make a banquet of him? Will they apportion him among the merchants? Can you fill his skin with harpoons, or his head with fishing spears?" This is so cool. "Lay your hand on him, remember the battle, never do it again." This is one mean creature. Verse 9, "Indeed, any hope of overcoming him is false. Shall one not be overwhelmed at the sight of him? No one is so fierce that he would dare stir him up." And what does God say to Job in the midst of this? "Who is able to stand against me? Who has preceded me that I should pay him?" God says. And God tells Job, "Everything under the sun, everything under heaven is mine." And God goes on describing what seems like the greatest of his creatures. Verse 12, "I will not conceal his limbs, his mighty power, or his graceful portions. Who can remove his outer court? Who can approach him with a double bridle? Who can open the doors of his face with his terrible teeth all around? His rows of scales are his pride, shut up tightly as with a seal. One is so near another that no air comes between them. They are joined together. They stick together and cannot be parted. Now it gets strange. Verse 18. His sneezings flash forth light, and his eyes are like the eyelids of the morning. Out of his mouth go burning lights. Sparks of fire shoot out. Smoke goes out of his nostrils, as from a boiling pot and burning rushes. His breath kindles coals, and the flame goes out of his mouth." Strange. I heard one creationist attempt to scientifically explain it away, and it was close enough to repeat, but we have no idea. He said a creature this large would have consumed quite a volume of food. And as we understand the way that creatures were created, they ate, in especially early times, and again, this is a very early book, they ate large quantities of grass and plants. We were created to eat what? In Genesis, fruit. So we're all actually created as fruitarians. We weren't given the ability to eat meat until after the flood in chapter 9. But anyways, so this creature would have been made to eat volumes of vegetation. And what happens when you pile up, say, mowed grass in a pile? It begins to break down, and it gets hot, and it steams. In fact, and if you cut up wood chips and put them in a heaping pile, they can actually turn into flame, poof, just like that. So there's a stretching odd. If the animal didn't chew his cud, it would create heat. And that's one thing that cows and horses and those things, horses don't chew cud, sorry, but cows and those animals that eat volumes of hay are able to regurgitate and re-chew their food so that it doesn't produce all this extra gas and heat. So if this Leviathan was created without all of those chambers in his stomach, and he consumed large quantities of grass and it did begin to break down and create heat, and if for some reason he had a sharp molar that sparked, I imagine that his burps would catch flame. So, it is funny to think about. But, so, I'm not sure how it worked, but the amazing thing is that God made it, and I'm so thankful that it's not here anymore. So, we go on learning about the Leviathan, verse 22. Strength dwells in his neck, and sorrow dances before him. The folds of his flesh are joined together. They are firm on him and cannot be moved. His heart is as hard as a stone, even as hard as the lower millstone. When he raises himself up, the mighty are afraid. Because of his crashings, they are beside themselves. Though the sword reaches them, it cannot avail, nor does the spear, dart, or javelin. He regards iron as straw and bronze as rotten wood. They cannot make him flee. Sling stones become like stubble to him. Darts are regarded as straw. He laughs at the threat of javelins. His undersides are like sharp potsherds. He spreads pointed marks in the mire. Now, if everyone remembers kind of what scientists think dinosaurs look like, where they have this long tail with these pointy things sticking up, well, this creature was created the other way. Underneath his tail were long, pointy things. And Job says they were like broken piece of pottery attached to his tail. And when he drugged them through the mire, you could see these sharp, deep trenches in the mire where this guy was. So, anyways, interesting to think about that you could tell where this Leviathan was by the draggings of the sharp pieces off his tail. Oh, where was I here? Verse 31, he makes the deep boil like a pot. He makes the sea like a pot of ointment. He leaves a shining wake behind him. One would think the deep had white hair. That's a picture. You know, when I see a big fish come up and swirl, you know, and you see that little bit of flash of movement, it makes you want to cast over there. But this is quite a bit bigger than that. This is so much more so that when this thing, creature, moves and turned up the sea, it created so much foam and distraught that you thought the ocean had white hair. That's big. That's quite a stirring in the water. And this is the creature that, again, God made and used to magnify him. One would think the deep had white hair. Verse 33. On earth there is nothing like him which is made without fear. This thing had no fear of anything. I thought lions were fearless. No, this thing was fearless. He beholds every high thing, and this is one of my favorite lines. He is the king over all the children of pride. If you think you can tangle with this guy, it's not going to happen. If you think you're a tough man and you're going to tangle with this Leviathan, I'm sorry, it's not going to happen for you. He is the king over all the children of pride. In chapter 42, then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that you can do everything, and that no purpose of yours can be withheld from you. If you want a promise to be excited about this morning, underline the last line there, verse 2. Circle it, highlight it. No purpose of yours can be withheld from you. No purpose of God's can be withheld from him. Can't do it. Verse 3, you asked, again, Job speaking to God, who is this who hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me which I did not know. Listen, please, and speak to me, and let me speak. You said, I will question you, and you shall answer me. And this is what Job says to God. This is his answer. I have heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore, I abhor myself and repent in dust and ashes. Job had heard of God, but when Job got done looking at the immense creation, he said, now I see God. Now I see God in the horse, in the large animals, in the sun, in the stars, in the lions, in the ravens. And Job said, now I see God. And so, how big is your monster now? 1 to 10. Same number? Maybe different? The monster of helplessness. The monster of grief. The monster of a difficult marriage. The monster of peer pressure. The monster of not understanding God's ways. Maybe in light of what you've read and understood about God, maybe your monster's gone. Maybe your monster's not gone. Maybe it's still here. And there is one more thing that can be done this morning if your monster still feels too big. You can bring it to the cross this morning. Because there is nothing too big for the God that made everything and for his Son who died for you. Although it wasn't fair, he did die for you. If there is a great, big, huge, scary thing in your life and it's not already reduced by the thoughts of God and nature, bring it to the cross this morning. If the chorister would please come and lead us here, and I'll have a closing song. Closing prayer. He'll have the song. Sorry. Didn't mean to scare you. The cross is a big enough place to come and lay your deepest fears at the feet of Jesus. And this morning, for some reason, God has ordained that there's no altar here this morning. And so I had to ask God, well, what are you planning? What should I do? And so if your burden is big this morning and you need to come lay it at the cross, you can make your hands like this, or you can make your hands like this, or if you need to go like this, bring it down front and just leave it here. If God's asking you to leave your burden at the cross this morning, carry it in whatever way that God asked you to. And just leave it here. And you can go back to your seats. If God's asking you to do that in a real way, to leave your burden with him this morning, and he asks you to get out of your seat, please come and just lay it at the front. And if you see someone doing that, remember to pray for them. And if God prompts you to talk to them afterwards, do that. Let's pray. Dear God, we are humbled. So humbled by your word this morning. We are humbled by your creation. We are humbled by your immense knowledge. God, sometimes even though we know who you are, it still seems big and scary, the world that you have placed us in. God, I am thankful for those that felt peace from your word this morning. And I pray for those that still struggle with the burdens that they carry. God, I pray that you would continue to minister to them, that they would be able to sense your leading and your guiding, and most of all, your love and care for them. God, we again are just grateful to be here. We are grateful for our next breath. And we are so thankful that you have provided a way for us to relieve our burdens through the cross this morning. God, we are humbled at the incredible act that even though it was unfair of you giving your only perfect Son for all of our weaknesses and all of our wrongdoings and all of our sin. God, I am humbled again. We thank you for the offering of your only Son. I pray that you would be with us and give us safety as we go from here and minister to those that need to lay their burdens down this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.